Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have back as my guest, Tricia McCannon. Today we will be discussing her new book, The Angelic Origins of the Soul, Discovering Your Divine Purpose. Tricia's been on the radio show many times. She is the author of several books, including Return of the Divine Sophia. And if you take a look at the archives at plasticos.com, for the radio show, we just did an interview on that book, Dialogues with the Angels and Jesus, the Explosive Story of the Lost of the 30 Lost Years in the Ancient Mystery Religions. I believe we did two interviews for that book that are in the archives. And Tricia is, I think, one of the most accomplished writers in spirituality, being given significant missions to gather information from many, many different sources. Her references are extensive. Her books are well illustrated with beautiful pictures. And I can tell you from doing 22 years of this radio show and interviewing many of the people that she mentions in this book, The Angelic Origins of the Soul, she's done a great job of putting it all together. This book, if I had read this book 20 years ago, I would have saved myself a lot of time because this book really puts everything in perspective and answers many, many of the questions that I had. Welcome, Tricia. Thanks for joining us.
Dr. Kolb, it's always such a pleasure to be on your show, and you have a wonderful producer that helps you with this show. And, you know, you're one of the heroes in Atlanta and also in 21st century medicine, because I know you never toot your own horn, but, you know, you are grounded both in the medical world but also in the metaphysical world. And it's one of the reasons why I think your show is such a great show, because it acts as a bridge for people between those paradigms.
Well, if they take a look at your book, you know, the evolution of the soul is so important. The evolution of, you know, our de-evolution coming out of God and then our evolution going back into God is really why we're here. And, you know, you probably heard the story of many very accomplished people who had maybe at a young age plenty of money, great relationships, great success in their occupation, and everything in the world was perfect for them, and yet they were profoundly, I wouldn't say unhappy, but searching for something of greater meaning. And I know that happened to me when I was in my late 20s, and I'm sure that happened with you too, in terms of, you know, you accomplished all of these things, but then there was this void that we started to try to fill with knowledge, information, meditation, and knowledge from the higher worlds, because it's not enough just to get the things of the world. It just doesn't satisfy. It doesn't accomplish anything. So I think if anybody out there is experiencing the kind of thing I just described, The Angelic Origins of the Soul really is a book you need to read.
Well, if you'd like, I'll tell the readers a little bit about that book and how it came to be.
Sure.
Does that sound good?
Yeah, that's great.
Well, as you know, the subtitle is Discovering Your Divine Purpose. And, you know, originally I was going to call that book The Landscapes of Heaven because, mm-hmm. as you know, it's divided into four sections. First section is kind of short, only two or three chapters. And it's kind of what all the great spiritual traditions of the world have said about the soul and the laws that govern it. So, you know, Christian, Jewish, Shinto, Taoist, Hindu, Buddhist, you know, really taking a look at the great wisdom traditions and how all of them basically talk about the laws of reincarnation, where the soul is eternal, and that it gets multiple chances to make forward, hopefully forward progress, not just treading water or going backwards in its evolution. But in each life, we really have a set of lessons that we have designed with our spirit guides, whether it's patience, compassion, teamwork, independence, interdependence, opening to our creativity, learning how to actually be in intimate relationship, or learning how to have courage on the battlefield of life. I mean, there's so many different lessons. So in the very first section, I'm taking a look at that perennial wisdom and also the laws of karma, which is, of course, as we sow in life is what we reap, not only in this life, but in terms of where we go when we go to the other side, and then in the next lifetime, based on the progress and the awareness that we've created and the goodness that we've created, we then incarnate into future lifetimes that reflect, you know, if we were cruel to people, we obviously need to learn how to not be cruel. So we wind up choosing lives of more suffering to learn more compassion. And if we've been, you know, let us say, beneficent or good generous in our spirits to helping others, then that, you know, is kind of in the karmic piggy bank, so to speak, and winds up coming back as a blessing for us. So this is what the first section is about. The second section is about those landscapes of heaven. So as you know, even though I'm a mystic, my dad was a lawyer, so I love the research. I really like to ground things as much as I can. So the question becomes, how about for people who don't even think we have souls? What's the evidence that we have a soul? Well, that would be their near-death experiences. And as you know, there are millions of people who have gone through these things now with medical science, where, you know, people have been able to die and come back to the other side, sometimes with heart defibrillators that, you know, re-jumpstart their heart. And they have incredible experiences that no matter what their religious persuasion or their race or their culture or nationality, they're basically some version of the same very incredible story about going through the tunnel, meeting a being of light, going through a life review, and then sometimes they get to come back. Other times they actually get to go into the heavenly realms and see the incredible light-filled landscapes where everything is alive. And sometimes they actually even get to go into these incredible crystal cities where knowledge is literally flowing out of temples, where they've gotten to go to the Hall of Records, where the past life records for every soul are kept, where they've gotten to meet beings of light and spiritual masters or seen angels. I mean, very powerful experiences. So that's part two, which should give a lot of people enormous amount of insight into where we come from and where we go between lifetimes, how we use that time between lifetimes, and how we choose to return, you know, to this life. And that section has a really important thing in it for me, and that has to do with the existence of the angelic twin. And until I began the research on this book, I didn't even know about the angelic twin, but this is a concept that was hidden in the deeper esoteric wisdom of the Essenes and then the Christian Gnostics. And, of course, other spiritual traditions, ancient ones, have had this knowledge. And it's that basically the largest part of us remains in heaven. In other words, who we actually are is an angelic being that is taking a sojourn in the physical world. And so the lives we're having down here might be 20 or 30 or 40% of our energy, where the balance of our energy always remains in heaven. And when we actually begin to embrace or, you know, contemplate this idea, it shifts everything, because what we've been taught in these Judeo-Christian religions is like, hey, you come down here, if you don't do what whatever the church or the synagogue or whatever tells you, you're going to either go to heaven or hell, and it's forever. And this is actually
eternal damnation.
Pardon me?
Eternal damnation.
Exactly, yes. And this is actually not what the perennial wisdom says. It says that basically we are already from these angelic kingdoms. The largest part of us continues to reside. And then time and again, we choose to extend a part of ourselves into the third dimension or the fourth dimension or even the fifth dimension to take various lives on this planet or other planets or different spheres in order to have experiences to begin to learn these life lessons. And, you know, and at the end of every life, basically this incredible being of light that meets us is most people think, oh, it's an angel, or maybe it's Jesus or Mary, mm-hmm. or in the Hindu religion they believe it's Lord Yama, the right. Yamadutas, the death angels, the god of death. In Egypt they would have thought it was Osiris. But basically, mm-hmm. what this perennial wisdom tells us is that it's not really these beings, although it seems to be because it's such a Christed, beautiful being. Mm-hmm. It's actually our own angelic higher self. So when right. the being says, let's do a life review, in essence, this being is saying, how did we do? What right. wisdom did you bring me back? What right. did you learn? And how can I integrate that into myself mm-hmm. so that we grow together? And so that's such a powerful concept. The Tibetan Book of the Dead says that if we actually recognize that being of light is ourself, which, you know, 99% of us will not do that because we haven't been taught that this is a possibility, you know, mm-hmm. we can actually become completely free of the wheel of reincarnation, the wheel of samsara or suffering, and we become enlightened, basically, because right. we're able to let those illusions or shadows or self-hatred or lack of forgiveness that we have been holding in our heart, that self-condemnation a lot of us carry, go. So that was a huge piece for me.
I love that, because I had not realized that either, even though I'd interviewed many people on their books about, you know, the big book of near-death experiences with 1,000 different ones. I don't think anybody that I've interviewed has realized that that is the angelic being that is ourself, that light. And I wanted to emphasize is that at the end of your life, you're being elevated into the higher realms, but if you have hatred or revenge or jealousy or envy in your heart, it limits how high you can go. And so that's exactly. the opportunity to release all of that so that you can go higher than you would have. And then it's really the height at which you go that determines your circumstances for if you go back in or not, or what level you go back in at. So how you die, that's why it's so important. How you die is so important in so many of the higher religions. You know, Gandhi was very concerned about how he died.
It's so true. And, you know, this is one of the reasons why I think practicing an attitude of gratitude is really key. Because yeah. it's very easy to get caught up in anger and resentment and drama and, you know, mm-hmm. like, what don't I have and what isn't working? And, you know, look over there, they're rich and beautiful and successful. You know, who am I, mm-hmm. chopped liver? You know, so, you know, we all have these, yeah. let's say, self-critical dialogues. But the truth is it doesn't really help us. It holds us down in terms of our right. vibration. And it's all about vibration. So the more love, the more forgiveness, the more we can have. As the Egyptian said, you know, if you have a hard heart, a heavy heart, you know, back to the drawing mm-hmm. board, you haven't learned the lesson.
Right.
But if you have a heart as light as a feather, you know, in their version of reality, when we got to that antechamber to heaven, we mm-hmm. weighed our heart, the purity of our heart, against the feather of Ma'at, or the feather of truth, the goddess of yeah. cosmic truth. And if our heart was as light as a feather, then why? Go on into heaven. You know, you've been living with
right.
love. So,
yeah, one of the documentaries I watched recently was on George Harrison, and he was obviously the most spiritual of all of the Beatles. And at the end of his life, his wife described how he was just really, really concentrating on this idea that we just talked about. And that it was very important to him to die correctly. So
George Harrison was wonderful.
It was very interesting.
The Beatles themselves were such a powerful catalytic force, and of course they were four very, very different individuals. But you know, you definitely had George, who was, I think, profoundly consumed with his love for the divine. You had mm-hmm. John, who obviously had very high. He had a perception about what we could create in the world. And, you know, these
with
were deep
thinkers. Yeah.
And then, of course, we all just love Paul McCartney. He was so cute, and Ringo was mm-hmm. the bad boy. They were just such a force of nature that really
And Ringo's still
him.
Around.
Yeah, you know what? They're all really great, and you and I are with the generation that could really appreciate the enormous impact and how they opened the door to other groups like the Moody Blues, the Grateful Dead, the Jefferson Airplane. You know, there were just so many amazing conscious people through the 60s and the 70s and the 80s. And I got to actually go to a Moody Blues concert earlier this year. They came to Chastain Park here in Atlanta, and I love them. Their music is so divine, and it's still just as fabulous now as it was 10 or 20 or 30 years ago. So.
Yeah.
So part three, you want to hear about part three and four?
Yeah.
Okay, so part three deals with what I have found over 6,000 readings over the last 30 years as a clairvoyant to be the genesis matrix of the soul. And what I found, which is quite different from what I had been taught, is that all of us actually do come from the angelic kingdoms. And I talk about the nine orders of the angels, and that each one of us comes from one of those nine. We don't change orders. Whatever we were, created in is intrinsic to our matrix. And so I talk about what those nine orders are and the energies and how each one of them has a certain, let us say, spiritual function. For example, the virtues are connected with they're the fifth order, and they're connected with the Divine Mother and the heart. And at the higher levels, they're weavers with light and sound. So when they come down here, many times they're musicians or painters or artists or people who heal with their hands or work with color therapy in some way. The powers or the sixth order angels are manifestor angels. So they are able to sort of work in the world of material manifestation in a really successful way. Many times they're architects or builders or engineers or, they have those practical skills. So I talk about all that. And then I talk about the six stages of soul evolution, from the very beautiful, innocent beginner soul to the more fearful, well-intentioned young soul, which is really our fundamentalist in any religion. They're good people, they mean well, but they're, they figured out this is a kind of a scary place. It's very unpredictable down here, and so they're usually busy making rules and regulations and setting curfews for everybody, and as long as everyone obeys those rules to keep what they believe are the lions and tigers and bears that are, threatening the kingdom out, then, everything's cool. But fear, unfortunately, runs a lot of what's going on in their choices in their life because they're young souls. And then there's the intermediate souls, and these are souls who really have figured out, hey, there's a game going on down here. There's winners, there's losers, there's dog eat dog, and I don't want to be eaten. So I'm going to be a winner no matter who I have to kind of screw over to get there. So these are souls that are consumed with power, whether they're rich and powerful, like, some of the people in politics we can see today, or whether or not they're, petty criminals. So it's more service to self, and they're usually creating lots of karma as they, make selfish choices left and right. And then there's the advanced souls, and these are souls that have suffered enough that they are now working on win-win dynamics. They many times have families. They're trying to, they're good people. They're kind. They try to do well. They don't always, succeed in sticking to their principles, but they work really hard at it. And the older they get, those souls actually become more and more interested in humanitarian efforts, trying to help the people, the children, the animals, the planets, the oceans. Right. And these are a lot of the people really who have set up these amazing charities to transform the world. And, I love those advanced souls. And then we have the master souls who are really down here for a deeper spiritual mission. And, of course, they're continuing the work of those advanced souls. And half of them never even marry because they're really on a mission and they can't marry someone that's going to pull them off the mission.
Right.
And then there are the bodhisattva souls. And those are the souls that really don't have to come down at all. They're like the great avatars, but they do come back because their compassion for humanity's suffering is so great. So, and then in section four, I get into the course curriculum of the soul, how we get into dysfunctional patterns, how we can break out of them. I talk about the three lies of adikarma, which are basically illusions that the ego falls into, which causes us to feel like we are separate from the divine. And everybody has at least one of those, but, you know, they only give you one to start, but it makes you heavy enough, like, here, you want to go to Earth, hold this anvil, you know, yep, it pulls you right down to the planet, you know, and right. your energy drops to the point that you can fall into the worlds of duality and start experiencing yourself as separate. And, of course, we're not really separate, but down here, many times we feel alone and abandoned and cut off and unworthy and, you know, all of those kinds of things. So I talk about the lies, these illusions, adikarma, the first karma that's given to us. We didn't really earn it, but it allows us to come into this realm. And then the emotions behind them, the defense mechanisms that the ego uses to keep us trapped in this game, and how we can break through them. And then I really talk about the deeper course curriculum, although there's a whole test in the back. I don't know if you've gotten a chance to flip back there, but a whole kind of self-examining test that you can take. Nobody ever has to see it but you. But, you know, I really go through about, I don't know, 50, 60, 80 qualities. And you can kind of say, oh, I'm just starting to learn that. Or, you know, I'm kind of really in the middle of that crisis and that lesson. Or I think I got that one handled. Or, nope, it's done. I mastered that one. So I wound up talking about basically the bigger version of this. If we back off from all of these many things that we as a soul have to learn through time, has to do with really the balance between and the mastery between the forces of love and the forces of power. And we all know if we have love with no power, we're like a doormat. And if we have power but we don't have love, we're a tyrant. So we need both love and power, which really kind of represent the divine father and mother. You know, we can really think of the father not just as power, but at the highest level is truth. And so it's that wisdom and love on the mother's side and that higher spiritual truth that brings us true spiritual empowerment on the Divine Father side. So, you know, it's a big lesson. It seems like it would be so simple, but as you know, if we love ourselves but we don't love others, we haven't mastered love. If we love everybody else but we don't love ourselves, we still don't have it. And, you know, most people think power means, you know, money, fast cars, you know, women, big casinos, you know, being the president, you know. But that's really not power. That's an illusion. The real power really has to do with our connection with Source, our connection with our own divine nature. And that's true empowerment. So that's kind of a little overview of the book.
Well, that's great. One of the female masters summed it up for me. She said, you have to be hard as a diamond and soft as a rose. And what that means to me is that you have to be spiritually guided in every situation to know how you're supposed to respond. Like Deepak Chopra said one time, he was young, he had a young wife and a baby, and a criminal broke into his home with the intent to kill them. And he was guided to take a baseball bat and hit the guy over the head. And that's hard as a diamond. And yet another time he was coming out of the back of speaking and he was held up by some young, like 13-year-old wannabe criminals. And he was not guided to hit them, but was guided to try to, you know, talk to them and offer them some other choices in holding them up. You know, so that's soft as a rose. So, you know, you have to be guided in every circumstance because the same threat does not always deserve the same, you know. But if he hadn't done the baseball bat thing, he probably might not have made it or his family wouldn't have made it. So you have to be guided.
That's really that love and power conversation, you know.
Exactly, it is.
Symbol of the Divine Mother. And you know, and there are times, you know, the masters talk about sometimes how, you know, you don't want to let anger ever own you, because it's like one of the five passions of the mind. But there are times where nothing else, if nothing else works, anger may be the only, you know, you can dummy up the anger and use it like a tool, or in this case, the baseball bat, you know. You know, you may, at the higher level, you may completely get that we're all divine souls, but at the point that someone's breaking into your house and threatening you physically, you know, you need to stand tall.
And great, it's that guidance is so important, you know. And, you know, if you really understand what's in your book, you will understand that you have complete, trustable, every time it's going to be correct guidance from that part of you that's in the higher dimension. So if you can merge with that energy through meditation, spiritual practices, whatever it takes, then anytime you're in danger, you're going to get the instructions to get out. You'll be fine. That's true spiritual protection.
It is, and that's practical wisdom. You know, when we think about, you know, what is that small, still voice within, that small, still voice really is the inner master. And who's the inner master? It's really the Christed being that we already are, the being that was created originally by the divine, but who still is learning. You know, the human part of us is imperfect, but this part of us has, you know, the divine perfection within it. And, you know, many ancient teachings talk about the Atman, you know, the Atman being the soul, that spark of the I Am presence. Or they talk about the divine Purusha. And I always love that. I first came upon the concept of the divine Purusha when I wrote the book about the lost years of Jesus. And the divine Purusha would be really the male aspect of the Christed self that permeates the universe. It's the witness self. So this is, you know, in theosophical literature, they talk about the monad. I was always like, what the heck is the monad? Like, you know, what are they talking about? Yeah, but the monad in their person, their idea is the soul, which let's call that the Atma, okay, that would be the Hindu version for it, the spirit, in other words, the part of us, the I Am presence that is actually the God spark that cannot be destroyed, and then the personality. And the personality, of course, is, you know, less than perfect and less than enlightened, even when we're, you know, pretty smart. You know, we still always have a way to grow and a ways to go. So the monad is kind of that combination of all of that kind of put together. And even though it seems like kind of a strange term, you know, I think there are other great mystics in many traditions who have sought to kind of understand these subtle differences and how we're all connected. And as you know, I'm a clairvoyant. I've read for over 6,000 people around the world. Sometimes people just want me to respond to things about this life, you know, career, health, relationships, past life, connections, purpose, all of that. But in truth, you know, the famous writer James Baldwin, a brilliant African-American writer, said, if we know from whence we've come, there is no limit to what we can achieve. So by understanding the deeper history of the soul, who we are, the journey we've taken, what we've mastered, what we're still working to master, we can begin to understand what our gifts and talents are, and also where we're still working, where we still have work to do. And then we can understand more fully what we're doing here, what we've come to the planet to do, and really begin to claim our purpose with more passion and more clarity. And that's one of the things I really, really believe. In fact, in 2018, I'm hoping to really create a program in the next, in the first 3 months of 2018 called Discovering Your Divine Design, which is designed to help people figure out how the circumstances of their individual life the challenges, the difficulties, are all part of like these seeds that the Spirit has been planting to help them actually, you know, ask the deeper questions, go through the lessons and the suffering to eventually come to what their purpose really is in this particular lifetime. And so, you know, I've posted a banner up on my website, which is TricianMcCannonSpeaks.com. And, you know, you can see it, but right now I haven't created the program. But in the book, I've given you enormous tools for figuring this piece out. So, you know, it's just been released, as you know, in, here it is, the very, very end of October 2017. And I'm really excited because it is beautiful. As you know, it's got about 100 black and white illustrations. Plus, they gave me a signature of 16 gorgeous color images. And I love my publisher, Inner Traditions. They're just terrific because they're really on this same wavelength about trying to help people to discover the deeper purpose behind what they're doing here in their missions.
Well, I think more than ever, people are beginning to question. You know, it's almost like the worst things get on the outside, and they're pretty bad right now. You know, we're going to go to war with North Korea, and the presidency is attacked, and the CIA is worried that they're going to get implicated in the JFK files. I mean, you've got all this drama going on out there, and it's pretty bad, and there's probably a fairly significant battle going on within the U.S. between the two major factions for power and control. But the worse it gets out there, the more people go within to determine what it is they need to do. Because the outside world isn't offering any answers right now. There's nothing but conflict out there. I mean, it's wild.
You know, it is. And, you know, you remember all these prophecies. You know, in January and February, through this company Portal to Ascension, I've been doing webinars this past year. I've probably done about 10 or 12. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to do one in January and one in February, which I'll post on my website, TriciaMcCannonSpeaks.com, about the prophecies. And we're looking at the Hopi prophecies and the Nostradamus prophecies and the Christian prophecies and, you know, the Mayan prophecies and all that. But as you know, there's talking about sort of like this tumultuous time period between about 2012 and, you know, I'm not sure if it's 2032 or something like that, where basically, you know, we've got the hurricanes, we've got the tornadoes, we've got the earthquakes, we've got the sinkholes, we've got tsunamis.
The fires.
And then fires, yes. And then, of course, we have all the political turmoil. And really, I think kind of in America, which has been such a great country for so long, It's a very difficult thing because I think what has happened is that, you know, we have, I talk about this in this new book, The Angelic Origins of the Soul, how there are like these three waves happening. There's the upward wave that moves towards awareness and the divine. That's called the sattva energy. It means golden. That's what sattva means. Then there's the tamasic energy, which pulls us down into darkness and conflict and confusion and turmoil and shame and blame and all that stuff, which is
obviously that's what's out there right now, out in the real world. You know, it's so intense.
Chaotic, exactly.
It is,
and then there's what's called the Raja energy, and those are horizontal energies that are like kind of materialism, bigger is better, and Raja cultures are... you know, they're not particularly deep. They do have a religious component, but it gives a lot of room with all that materialism for a lot of creativity, but it's not really so deep in terms of connecting with God. And so we have in America and a lot of Europe a Raja, primarily a Raja culture. It's materialistic. But we have a subculture, probably a lot of our listeners, that are sattva people. These are people who are really trying to awaken, do good in the world, become more spiritually aware and enlightened and be in their purpose. Mm-hmm. And then we have a tamasic energy that's angry, defensive, blaming, dark, and creates conflict. And all you have to do when you look at political figures is say, is this person bringing harmony, peace, wisdom, and insight? Oh, they're sattva, more sattva-oriented. Is this person mm-hmm. all about creating conflict, blame, shame, never taking responsibility for themselves, name-calling others? They're a Tamask person. They're mm-hmm. moving away from the light. And if they're in a leadership position, what happens is it throws everybody out of sync because, mm-hmm. you know, they're supposed to be the inspiring moral leader. But if the leader has no moral compass or is creating mm-hmm. all this, you know, lying and defensive narcissism, as we can sort of see, then we have a problem because the captain of the ship is creating turmoil everywhere. And then, mm-hmm. you know, he may claim to be, in Trump's case, for example, a Raja person. In other words, he's really just in it for the oil and for his own profits. But because mm-hmm. he's so stuck between, you know, that service to self consciousness that he's been in, and, you know, you can't lead the free world from that place of selfishness. This is not about the president or the vice president or any one person. It's about all of us. It's about the country, and it's about upholding spiritual and moral ideals that are an inspiration to the rest of the world. And, if you're an intermediate soul who's about service to self, it doesn't work.
Yeah. You know? But he has the opportunity. He really has a great opportunity. If he releases the JFK files, and then he releases the information about 9/11, and then he releases the information about the secret space program and disclosure, he will be the one president who's been able to do that without being assassinated. So he has in his potentiality... He has a great opportunity. So, you know, I'm rooting that he's going to do that because he is not under the control of the powers that be that have controlled so many of our past leaders. So that's, I mean, I agree with you that he comes from a materialistic and service to self world, but I think his higher self is going to push him toward these disclosures because I think he really is the first president that's going to be able to do it. Now, we'll see. I mean, you know, he's holding back 2,800 files to be looked at more closely. He didn't do all of the disclosure for JFK. But we have a great opportunity to really bring the darkness that this country's been in since probably the 50s out into the light under his leadership. We'll see how he does, you know.
Yeah, we'll see how he does.
It's very interesting.
I'm rooting for him to make really better choices because
I think he can. I think he's a mixed bag. You know, he's a mixed bag of, but he has great potentiality. And I don't know, looking at him, I don't know whether you've actually looked at his chart and looked at his, you know, his potentiality, but it is really pretty interesting. He does have the ability to overcome a great darkness if he is not, you know, threatened, his family's not threatened, he's not assassinated. He's had multiple assassination attempts already that he's been able to be spiritually protected from. So that is all, you know, he may have the spiritual protection that others have not had, even though on a day-to-day basis, you know, you know his personality is as you described. But what kind of spiritual protection does he have? That's the question.
Well, all I can say is I'm rooting for the light, and anyone who really, you know, speaks truth in a high way mm-hmm. and thinks of others as well as themselves, not just in words, but in actual deeds,
right.
You know, and has a moral compass that points towards, you know, truth and the light, that's mm-hmm. that's fundamental. You know, you can't really make progress. You can't even be self-reflective if you can't be truthful and take responsibility
right.
for yourself. So I'm rooting for him to really be the president we all really want him to be, you know.
Yeah.
I think that would be great for everybody. But definitely, as you say, we're having a lot of chaos. And I think this
right.
is one of the reasons why I wrote this book is because, you know, I have, like I said, read for over 6,000 people around the world, and the perennial questions that we've all been asking for millennia mm-hmm. is, you know, who are we, where do we come from, where are we going, what is this crazy game called life all about? You know,
right.
How come sometimes some people seem to have all the good luck and other people seem to, you know, have all the bad luck? And, you know, who makes these decisions? Is it all just random or chaotic? Are there some spiritual laws that are operating behind the scenes here that nobody gave us that little booklet that explained it, you know, when we came out of our mother's womb?
No.
I always thought we should have this booklet that would say, you are here, little blue-green
yeah.
planet. You have come from
and
here.
And you're trying to get there.
So you're trying to get there. But it
well,
would
describe
make it so much comfort,
the,
wouldn't it?
Describe the thing in the middle of the book where we're above, we're not in body, we're above planning our life, and all of the choices, and you know, the describe that that scenario, how we have different choices at that level before we actually come in.
Well, we absolutely do, and to do that, I want to kind of talk about the ring of destiny, and the ring of destiny.
Right, that's
is
it. Ring of destiny.
That,
thank you.
Yeah, Dr. Michael Newton. I always try to give credit where credit is due because, you know, there's some really wonderful people out there that have been mentors for me as mm-hmm. I have gone along, just as I'm a mentor for, you know, many thousands of people out there. And Dr. Michael Newton was a traditional psychiatrist, I think, who didn't believe in any of this, you know, spiritual anything. He thought it was all mumbo jumbo. And he wound up having a patient who had a problem. It was a woman who, you know, was falling into selfishness and greed and all that kind of stuff. And he hypnotized her and said, go back to where the problem first started. Well, to his surprise, he found she went back to the 1930s where she had come in as a male lawyer in the Midwest. And her mm-hmm. sole intent, being born to good family parents, had been to grow up with a moral compass and to help fight the mafia in that area. But instead, mm-hmm. you know, he, the lawyer, had been seduced by money and power and greed. And in the end, the mafia had framed him to take the fall, and he had, you know, killed himself, blown his brains out.
Right.
So when Michael Newton heard all this, of course, he was flabbergasted because he didn't even believe in past lives. But he, you know, followed the soul when it left the body and went through the checkout interview with its guides, where, of course, its guide, you know, was basically saying, you know, hey, well, you just kind of have to go back and do it all over again. You know, learn the lesson. You didn't learn
right.
it. And you didn't follow your original life plan. You succumbed. But what this did was, number one, it gave the client the perspective to understand how she, in this lifetime, was falling into the same patterns and to change her course because she was able to get the bigger perspective. But from Michael
right.
Newton's point of view, it ignited this passion in him to find out what the heck happens when we go to the other side. So his first mm-hmm. book, Journey of Souls, and second book, Destiny of Souls, was very much case studies of people he had hypnotized and what happened when they went to the other side. And
right.
it's think
a brilliant concept, isn't it?
Pardon
it's
me?
It's a brilliant concept. I mean, it's amazing.
It's wonderful. And I quote him in my books, and I probably bought 20 of his books and given them away as presents through the years. So
mm-hmm.
I always recommend his work. He's,
yeah, I had him on the radio show a couple of times. He was wonderful.
I think he's in his 80s now. And so
yeah, he's
I don't
not
know
doing interviews right now, but his books are great. They really are. So
well, they
and,
are.
And all
and
thousand, I'm... the thousand people, there were many, many similarities. So we have a lot of more scientific evidence that this is really the way it is, just statistically.
Well I cover some, as you know, in the Landscapes of Heaven section, I cover mm-hmm. some of these major, wonderful, incredible cases and experiences and draw from many sources to, as you say, bring this clearer picture of heaven and this compilation together.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly he's one of the sources that I quote. And he talks about this process. It's a I actually quote from the book, from the hypnotherapy session, where there's a person that is choosing their life, and they go into
mm-hmm.
this incredible sort of holographic bubble they call the Ring of Destiny, and they're the
right.
great lords of karma, or Lipkas as they're called, give him a choice of two or three possible lives. So in this ring, he's able to actually see how the life would unfold, and then he's actually able to choose which one of these two or three choices of lives all of which have lessons and challenges embedded in them he wants to take on. And, of course, these mm-hmm. lives have been chosen based on what he and his guides and his council of elders that I talk about in my book have decided as sort of the next step for him. And so mm-hmm. let's just say, for example, one example I gave in the book is, let's say you wanted to have a life where you really developed your musical ability. So maybe your choices are, you know, to be a British girl from an educated musical family in England where you get the education, but you don't get the warmth and affection, but you get the money, you get the concert connections. Mm-hmm. You have all of that laid out, but it's not a warm and fuzzy family. Or maybe you choose to become a Latino boy in L.A., poor, broken family, but, hey, you get discovered on the streets of L.A., you become a famous rap star, but then you're having to deal with money and drugs and success in the middle of developing your creativity, plus a broken home life. Or maybe you choose to become a little boy in Africa who has a loving family, a loving village, you know, and becomes a shaman and a healer as well as a musician and a drummer. You're never famous, but at the same time, you wind up, you know, having a more balanced life. And so mm-hmm. the soul then has to choose which one of these avenues
right,
it wants
one?
To take
yeah.
on. Pretty interesting,
and then
huh?
also the lessons. Like, if you're learning unconditional love, you might want to choose the English family because then you learn to love yourself despite not having the love from the family. You see, you've got to match your lessons up with the situation.
That's exactly right. And so there are multiple yeah. levels of lessons that we're learning. So when
That's
we
right.
really think about it, these lords of karma or masters are truly brilliant. I mean, they have to come up with the family mm-hmm. that we're born into, the place we're born into, the race we're born into, the economic circumstances we're born into, the astrology,
right.
the astrological birth date that gives us the chart, the astrological chart that has a lot of the gifts and abilities and mm-hmm. opportunities and challenges in it. I mean, it's really profound when you think about how much wisdom you would have and how much work goes into the planning behind the scenes of every single life.
Yeah,
and, of course,
and you know what? It's also on your hand. Your hand lines, it's on your body.
Right. It's
written on your
like,
body.
It's a hologram. It's
it is. It's amazing.
It's geology. It's just absolutely incredible, really, if you
yeah.
think about the profundity. It's like so spiritual law, as above, so below, as below, so
yeah.
above. You know, the universe is a reflection of us, and we are a reflection of it. It's amazing.
So for every major challenge that you have in your life, you need to really pray about it, go within, and find out, are you going to, you know, go into the same pattern of defending your ego, being, you know, choosing the comfort or the, you know, the path you're used to and, you know, expressing your anger and getting even and all of those things? Or are you going to go the opposite way? Are you going to make progress, go the opposite way, do forgiveness, do gratitude, do the other spiritual practices? And in each major decision, each major life crisis, you have two ways you can go. Sometimes more than two, but two ways you can go. And one will advance you spiritually, and the other may take you the other direction.
Bravo. That is so well said and so absolutely true. Absolutely.
So be careful. You know, just take your time with each major decision and think of the consequences, not, you know, like tomorrow, next week. Think of the consequences in terms of when you reach that point that these books talk about, when you are actually in your life review and then you realize, oh my God, I made the complete wrong decision at that critical time, and if I'd made just that other choice, I would have gotten my life's purpose. I would have been able to do what I came to do, but instead, you know, I defended my ego, my self-righteousness, and then, boom, guess what? You got to do a whole nother lifetime.
Yeah, and let me just say that, you know, we are eternal souls, and the process of learning is a continual one, and there are always going to be people behind you, and there are always going to be people ahead of you. This is not a short, you know, race. This is the long haul race. So I think it's really important for us to remember to forgive ourselves and give ourselves a break so that we don't beat ourselves up too much, and we realize that everybody is in Earth school. And I open my book, as you know, I don't know if you read that opening, but where I send the message from the Galactic Council about the courage it takes for us to come down here and to take on these lessons, basically with one hand tied behind our back and our memories gone. And so I think we have to give ourselves, I think of this as the PhD program, to be honest. This is not for the faint of heart coming down here. So we just have to give ourselves a break and realize that even though we may have made a wrong turn here, a wrong turn there, you know what? Tomorrow, as Scarlett O'Hara said, tomorrow is another day.
Right.
And every single day we get up, we get an opportunity to create the life that we want. And this is really critical to us, remembering that we are loved and we are watched over by beings that know who we are even more than we know ourselves.
Yeah, so, that's very true.
So, yeah, thank you so much for having me on the show. I know we're kind of at the end of our hour. And if people are interested in knowing more, by all means, come to my website, TriciaMcCannonSpeaks.com. That's TriciaMcCannon, just like it sounds, speaks.com. And I'm going to New York on Wednesday. I'll be gone for a couple of weeks, but I'll be back around the 13th of November. And I look forward to talking to you. Maybe we can go out to dinner when I come back.
I'd love that. That'd be great. Well, I just want to say that The Origins of the Soul is a great compilation of spiritual wisdom from many, many different spiritual, traditions. And even takes it beyond that, though. It takes it into, a realm where each one of us can learn something about ourselves from this book, and more importantly, the path that we need to take and the decisions we need to make and the big picture of everything that's going on out there. And Tricia's done a great job doing that, and I really appreciate her writing this book.
Thank you so much, Susan. Till the next time.
Until the next time, this is Dr. Susan Kalb with Temple of Health Radio Show. Please join us next week.